Welcome, everyone, to the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt, and joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. How are you?
Doing fantastic, Pete. Summer is now behind us, so today we're doing our Marvel Cinematic Universe summer wrap-up to talk about not only the things that that did happen, but some of the news stories that hit. So I guess fair warning, as soon as we get done talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, we will officially be entering potential spoiler territory, and one of the most spoilery things that we will be discussing, like, I figured out without reading any of the articles. So it's kind of like low spoiler, but if you want to be completely doe-eyed, download this another five times and then don't listen.
Yes.
Pete, first, let's talk Guardians of the Galaxy. And where is that box office up to?
Where is that box office up to? Well, it is expected that by September 10th, Guardians of the Galaxy, already the number one movie of the summer and the year, will surpass $300 million domestically. Matt, do we have a latest update internationally?
I believe, I certainly could look it up, I believe it's in the neighborhood of about $550 million. I was surprised that it hasn't had the international box office that some of the other Marvel movies have had. Right now it's up to $560 million. I know that they were going for kind of a more of a staggered release internationally,
okay,
where, say, Captain America, the last place it opened was the America. So I don't know if that's kind of just lagging as opposed to, like, foreign people don't like Gamora. But hey, $560 million total, that's pretty darn good.
I mean, half a billion dollars is certainly nothing to sneeze at. And again, we called this. So you're welcome.
Pete, fair's fair. We both definitely called that it had a shot at being the number one movie of the summer. I was less bullish on it being the number one movie of the year, and you were definitely standing behind that more. So I will give credit to you. You called the totality of this box office bonanza.
Thank you. I mean, when you read the tea leaves, there's also always the possibility you can be wrong. But just looking at how weak this summer was as far as offerings, I think it was a really easy decision, and people have spoken with their dollars. Is it ultimately going to wind up the top grossing movie of the year? I'm not 100% sure. I could certainly see a threat in the third Hunger Games movie. What is that? Katniss, goes on vacation, or whatever that one's called.
I think that's Mockingjay. Yes.
Yeah. So, is it enough time between when that opens in November and the end of the year? Certainly is. But, you know, we know that those sequels, they get a big push early, and then, you know, it really decreases on the back end. And, you know, the thing that I looked at Guardians of the Galaxy with was, you know, while it's connected to this Marvel Cinematic Universe that we're involved with through the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast and the larger universe as a whole, it is this offshoot. It is almost completely new and fresh, whole new set of characters, whole new attitude and vibe. And if you look at the week-to-week box office numbers, it's been completely impressive and pretty unprecedented how well it is held from week to week. You know, Matt, you're the guy that can cite, ad infinitum, the, 50% drop, et cetera, et cetera. Talk a little bit about this one.
Well, week after week for Guardians of the Galaxy, it's been more in the 40% drop. So that kind of cumulative effect week after week certainly is, at a certain point, you're just having a slower decay. It really is just astonishing that it's done the business that it has. Not that we were down on it as a property. To be fair, slight asterisk in all this is, it's been a down box office year for everybody.
Yes.
So this, in other years, this might not have been first place in the summer. Pete, while you mentioned Mockingjay, I was just looking at some of the Box Office Mojo numbers for the winners of each year. If Guardians of the Galaxy, let me put it this way, as far back as, how far back did I go? 2003, no movie has won the year at $300 million. I think maybe the lowest I saw was like 380. Catching Fire in 2013 did almost $425 million domestically. So now is probably a good time for us to predict it. It has a good shot at not being the number one movie of the year by the time, you know, the ball drops in Times Square on December 31st. But no one predicted it would do $300 million. No one predicted that it would be September and it was the number one movie of the year. So,
correct. Well, some of us did.
That's true. Except for you. That's right. When I say no one, I meant kind of out there in the zeitgeist.
And truly, this is not a necessarily a blatant I told you so, but, you know, listeners, please go back, listen to, you know, we've got a whole backlog of podcasts that you know, you can go back and listen to and hear us, as you know, early as this time last year, saying that this movie in August of 2014 would be something special. And you know, it's just nice to be validated in the way that things happened.
Yeah, by the way, as I've been clicking here, the last movie to win the year without breaking $300 million was all the way back in 2000, The Grinch. So,
without breaking $300 million?
Sorry, $300 million. What did I say, 2000?
No. You said without breaking $300 million, and this is going to break $300 million?
Sorry, The Grinch did not break $300 million. It was the top movie of the year in 2000. I assume they're taking some of the box office from 2001, since it came out in November. Guardians of the Galaxy will break $300 million, but probably not by a lot. Like, it's probably going to stop at about 310.
Right.
So, hey, it is what it is. You know, it's enjoyed this long, 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 long tail. So by the time, if something does overcome it, which I would probably put Mockingjay as the prime candidate, if it does overtake it, it's not going to be this situation of, you know, oh, people stop seeing the one movie to go see the other movie because they're competing for audience. Like, if you want to see Guardians of the Galaxy, you will have seen it by the time, if something surpasses it, if that thing, you know, when that thing comes out, you will have had your shot. So,
yeah.
Hooray, Guardians of the Galaxy.
And two last things for me on that. One, I think that, you know, Marvel would have signed in blood to have this be even the number two highest grossing domestic movie of the year. If Mockingjay possibly can defeat it, and two, with Mockingjay Part One, because, you know, it's a three book you know, cycle, but Hollywood needs to split it up into four films to get more money for the property they paid for. And you know, that splitting one book into two movies gag, if you will, the first one is always the lowest grossing of the two, because it's not the final one. It's the
final goodbye.
Penultimate. And even further, the decay by sequel. We know that that tends to be an issue as well. And, you know, this is battling some issues in the, you know, the death of Philip Seymour Hoffman, although he did complete his filming for this one, but he's not in the final one, and they're going to do some digital working around to do that. So, you know, not to pin that to the box office, but I think it's an issue as well.
Well, the closest analog to this would be Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1 and 2. Part 1 did $295 million. Part 2 did about $75 million more, $381.
Right.
So that's a good bit of prognostication there, Pete. And if we use old Harry Potter as a reference, I guess it's possible that Guardians of the Galaxy maintains that crown. But shall see.
Nothing against The Hunger Games, but I think that the Harry Potter was a slightly more anticipated and pent up book and film series.
I think that's fair. I think well, I mean, particularly given the length of both the book and the film series.
Yes, and the the talent and product, I think, as well.
Oh my. Pete, you might be offending some of our female listeners here.
No. I mean, listen, I really don't think you can dispute that Harry Potter is a, well, it's kind of apples and bowling balls. No, I mean, a 7-book series to a 3-book series. It's not at all meant. And you want to talk female archetypes. Okay. Hermione, really? Like, pretty strong. No.
So, Pete, what you're saying is that if Katniss fought Harry Potter, she'd lose merely because she has an XX chromosome. Is that what you're saying?
No, they can't fight because they're in different worlds, unless this is some kind of weirdo Super Smash Brothers situation. Okay. Which, all right, I'm sure there's some fanfic someplace of a magic wand versus,
A bow and arrow
matchup. But I think you could make a fair argument that Jennifer Lawrence is already overexposed.
Wow. Well, on that note, we'll move from the world of Liam Hemsworth to the world of Chris Hemsworth by way of coming back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And from Guardians of the Galaxy, we move on to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Pete, what are the three biggies that we got in terms of casting news this summer?
Okay, well, in no particular order, we can now completely confirm that Adrian Palicki is going to be playing Mockingbird, who is a super spy in the Marvel Universe. Lucy Lawless is joining the cast of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as S.H.I.E.L.D. veteran Isabel Hartley. And then for my money, the big one, only because he's got the largest pedigree, both in terms of the genre and in terms of his career to this point. But Kyle MacLachlan, no name yet confirmed, but confirmed to the cast. And Matt, why don't you talk a little bit about what you might know? Because as we know, I know a little bit more.
When the news of his casting was announced, it was like a lot of the headlines were like, Kyle MacLachlan joins Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as, you know, redacted or spoiler or click below to find out more. And I was like, wait a minute. Okay, Kyle MacLachlan, he's probably, I don't know, he's probably in his 50s at this point. Gee whiz, big name, mysterious. They just want to tell you that he's, you know, Agent Joey Jones, a real straight shooting guy from Texas who believes S.H.I.E.L.D. can protect everybody. Gee, what mystery man of a fatherly age could he be playing? Of course he's playing Skye's father. Of course. To me, that's not even spoilery. That's just like, if you're listening to this podcast and you're keeping track of the headlines or you're on Twitter or whatever, he's playing a mystery man. Of course he's Skye's father.
I don't think that it's, a massive spoiler. I think it's going to be in the way in which they are connected and the way that that story is obviously revealed. But, you know, though he's, been around for a while, and not necessarily getting the, I mean, this is a guy who headlined, you know, big budget movies in the 80s. Okay. Not necessarily getting that work anymore. This is still a get. And I think he and Lawless are going to be tremendous additions from a veteran standpoint to this show. It remains to be seen how much they'll be on the show. But I don't think you go and get and cast and announce actors of that magnitude without a much larger scope in mind. I think Palicki will be around for multiple episodes as well. But again, it remains to be seen at this point.
It would be interesting if they kind of dated Janet Leigh for at least one of these characters, and you're like, hey, these are the three big names, and we have a couple of smaller names to discuss in a moment, and you're just like, oh man, how long is Isabel Hartley going to be with them? How long is Skye's father, et cetera, et cetera? And it's just kind of like a one and done or two episodes. I mean, kind of similar to what they did with, the actor who played the fake clairvoyant, who was in Voyager, who was in Billy Babbitt in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Mm-hmm.
What's that actor's name? He was in The X-Files as a first season.
I can't pull it right now.
I'll look up on the old computer. But it would be interesting if they did that kind of, you know, switcheroo of where you have a certain expectation. Brad Dourif.
Yes. Where
we were like, oh, man, you know, how long is he going to be in it for? Well, he was in what? Was it just the one episode?
Yes. Just
okay. And kind of underused. But I think it was in that tradition of Janet Leigh where you're like, underusing him for dramatic purposes, for storytelling purposes. So
absolutely. And hey, second season, they're established now. You raise the stakes. And, you know, we're going to use the classic example of The Empire Strikes Back here. Okay. Star Wars was a success on its own, but it became what it could be in that second, we can take all the risks now, incarnation. And, you know, I would argue never the same since. So, you know, we're going to see. And in many regards, the redemption arcs and things we're going to see here. And now that S.H.I.E.L.D. is a completely different animal and everything like that, you know, and Jeff Loeb explained to us at New York Comic Con, you know, they had a 4-season plan to start with. And they're executing that. And where they can take it now that they've been given the faith to come back, which was never really, you know, a possibility that they would not. You know, TV ratings being what they are, being the, you know, shrinking subset that they've become with all the different platforms competing, you know, they're going to be able to take more risks now. And I think that's why we're seeing so many casting announcements at the start. We've got a couple others to cover here, and again, remains to be seen how much they won't be involved.
Yeah, I think despite the fact that Jeff Loeb in particular loves his secrets, this is kind of the way that ABC and Marvel TV and everybody is showing a vote of confidence in the show, that it's not just kind of like, we're not quite sure what this is. Do we kind of crank out another 20 episodes and try and break even? It's just boom, big names and some little names. We have Reed Diamond, who's going to play Diamond, who's going to play baddie Daniel Whitehall, aka Kraken. There's going to be Nick Blood, who plays a S.H.I.E.L.D. not a S.H.I.E.L.D. mercenary, but a friendly mercenary. Henry Simmons, no relation, as they keep saying, as a S.H.I.E.L.D. good guy named Mac. And then Simon Cassianidis as Bakshi. Smaller names, certainly, but just an infusion into the show that I don't think it necessarily needs, but that they can benefit from nonetheless.
Yeah, and, you know, that they have the confidence at this point to put out these names and the characters with the casting and everything like that, you know, not knowing this guy's around for one episode. This guy is, you know, the new agent triplet in the idea that will be appearing in a number of episodes, or a Reyna or anything like that. The girl in the flower dress who appears in the 5th episode and then is an entire component of the back end of the series for season 1 and going forward, you know, can certainly be somebody that we'll see. So that's the beauty of the mythological show that we're dealing with here. And, you know, let's get it started, man. Let's get season 2 going already. I'm ready.
And Agent Triplett is a good example there, where there hasn't been a formal announcement of him recurring or him joining the cast, you know, as a full cast member. He's been like in every picture I've seen. He's been on Twitter, you know, with, you know, oh, here I'm working out with Nick Blood and Ming-Na Wen. Certainly it's my expectation that we're going to see in the opening credits on September 23rd that he is a part of the cast. You go back 5 years from now, start watching the show from the beginning. He's just going to join the cast as a guest actor in season one and carry on there. Unless you're kind of reading through the credits, you're not going to be as concerned as to the nature of that credit. My point being, here he is part of the family now, or any one of the, you know, is Reed Diamond, Nick Blood, Henry Simmons, or Simon Cassianidis, or any of those starting small, and then, man, by season five, you're like, oh, Pete, can you believe that episode where Mac, oh boy, he's come so far, he's grown as such an individual since we first met him in season two. You know, the possibilities are endless for any of these people to grow into either full-fledged characters or, you know, guy who gets killed after two episodes.
Yeah, and I mean, you can look at the season one, you know, recurring characters between, you know, Antoine Triplett, played by BJ Britt, and there's an old school SSR connection there. So maybe we'll see the grandpa in Agent Carter, and he was in eight episodes. And then, you know, J. August Richards as Mike Peterson / Deathlok, who's in the pilot. And then again in the back end, you know, recurring throughout the season. And Raina, and then Paxton's now deceased character, John Garrett, who was in seven episodes. So we can certainly do this, you know, and have this type of idea going forward.
Well, Pete, moving forward, Twitter has been all abuzz with the fact that for maybe about 6 weeks, actor Brett Dalton had a beard, which of course is the TV symbol for bad. lately, he's appeared clean shaven. So, Pete, how much should we read into Brett Dalton's kind of, sartorial choices as a reflection on the show? And can we expect, I think we all expect Ward's redemption. The fact that he wasn't killed off at the end of the season as the Whedon dead, we expect him to go through some sort of effective story at redemption. But Pete, what's that timeline in your mind?
They're filming episode 5 or 6 right now, and that the beard is now gone in recent pictures. I think we can reasonably assume he's back on the team in some kind of guarded capacity. Like I called during the finale last year, by episode 7, you know, they're going to have to trust him in some way, shape, or form. Now, does he backbite them again and sneak off with the rest of his Hydra buddies? Who knows? You know, there is official footage through teasers and trailers out there of him, you know, under guard with the beard. Okay, so they go with that. What were they going to do? Scar the guy and suddenly make him appear bad? It's a visual medium.
Right.
You know, maybe you give him a black eye. I don't know. You know, it's in keeping with that, you know, Ward with a beard. I say weird with a beard, but, you know, that's the archetype. And we've got to clearly play out that redemption arc. S.H.I.E.L.D., as we said, again, a different animal. And with director Phil Coulson now, just as opposed to the agent before, he gets to run the shots, but it's a different show. It's going to have to, by the nature of the conflict, you know, run differently the second season. And that's what I'm really looking forward to the most. Not that I dislike the way that it ran before, but you can shift it up. You know, you're not rebooting it, but it's a shakeup, and that's cool. And then it can be have such a different identity in the second season, on top of the fact that they're going to run this whole season without a Marvel movie to kind of come in and out of, the way they did with Thor in November of last year and then Captain America in April, which worked so well when it came to Captain America. And there was all that, you know, early on, like, oh, the people saying and critics, et cetera, the show's not finding its way. And then you cannot watch the end of the season last year in and out of Captain America and how it just took off after that and say that it didn't come together. It absolutely did. They have a plan. The addition of Agent Carter somewhere in the middle of this run this year is super exciting as well. And it's all, both of these shows are all inexorably moving towards Avengers Age of Ultron, and they will all be connected to that. So by May 1st, which, you know, maybe two or three episodes left of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming in and out of that movie, it's going to be enormous. We talked about the box office for 2014. The box office for 2015 is going to be off the chain. You can already point to Avengers as one of the top two movies of next year, okay, on the ledger in terms of money. I will sign that one in blood right now. I don't think Star Wars, while I think it ultimately may take in more, is going to have enough time in 12, 13 days when it opens at the end of 2015 to equal the take of Avengers.
Side note, I don't know how the Hollywood bean counters count movies that open up in December. I suspect they might just count it in the calendar year, even though it spills into the next. But
right.
I mean, regardless, you're absolutely right. For the calendar year or the financial year or the just counting when the movies open and whatever, it's going to be huge. And you mentioned Agent Carter. Let's you know, here we are previewing the fall. Let's preview January when Agent Carter comes out. It's almost, some of the news from Agent Carter made me more excited about Agent Carter, which is great, but it also made me kind of like, oh, but what about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? the biggest one of those that caused that reaction in me was, it's expected that episodes 2 and 3 are going to be directed by the Russo brothers, of course, of Captain America 2 fame, as well as Community. And it's expected that perhaps the 4th episode will be directed by Joe Johnston, he of Captain America 1 fame, as well as The Rocketeer. So really some high pedigree there. I don't know.
That's enormous for a TV show to get in its 2nd, 3rd, and possibly 4th episodes to get, very successful, high grossing film directors. And again, only speaks to the faith they have in what we think right now is a limited run show. It could be conceivable that this is just meant to run the episodes we're going to get this year, the one season, et cetera, et cetera. You know, there is some period stuff, and this is not a spoiler, it's out there, that takes place in Avengers Age of Ultron, and hence, you know, I think Agent Carter and that time frame being more prominent than maybe it had even been in Captain America the First Avenger.
Thank goodness ABC is learning to do this kind of more cable style shorter season. You might say, oh, but they're not doing that for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Yes and no. I really have to, once ABC committed to the scheduling that they're doing for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yes, we're calling the next 22 episodes or so of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., we're calling that season 2. Yes, they're presumably not taking much of a break, maybe aside from the holidays, for these 22 episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Does that mean that Marissa Tancheron and Jed Whedon can't treat the first 10 episodes as a season and the second 10, 11, 12 episodes as another season? I sure hope they do. Oh. I mean, I just hope, and we don't need to get into the semantics even of 2A, 2B. Make it a fairly self-contained story for the first 10 episodes, the fall chunk, and then obviously there's going to be some sort of ongoing story and there might be a cliffhanger, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I would almost prefer, let's get the Lucy Lawless episodes in the fall and mm-hmm. the Adrian Palicki episodes in the second half to just really make it clear. You have a 10-episode season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you have an 8-episode season of Agent Carter, then you have a 12-episode season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., regardless of what number we're going to slap on DVDs next September.
Oh, I'm going to tell you how it's going to work right now. This is with no inside knowledge. You know, your
that,
first
that you'll admit to.
I'll admit to with the spoiler, Pete. But you know, your first half of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is obviously going to deal with the fallout from the Hydra reveal. Okay, the Ward stuff, everything there. S.H.I.E.L.D. being a scaled down, needing to build back up in a proper and non-corrupted, corroded core. There'll be a obvious Hydra and S.H.I.E.L.D. link into Agent Carter. And then when we come back for S.H.I.E.L.D., you know, winter, spring of next year, that's going to be the straight buildup into Avengers. And whether it's an Ultron connection and the robotics and what's going on there, or whether it's some of the special power people who are not called, you might even have to bleep this here, mutants, Matt?
Well, we can say it. We don't work for Disney.
Heading into Avengers, who knows, you know, but it's a really exciting time at the outset of this to speculate and to wonder about what we're going to see. And then, you know, let's forget as if that's the end of it once we get through Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and, you know, Agent Carter on the TV for Marvel this year, because then we have the Netflix, the first of the Defenders series is in Daredevil.
And that is up to episode 7, which I thought was interesting that it appears, and who knows what their, you know, their production schedule is and et cetera, but that they are at a farther episode count than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I found interesting, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has to, you know, hit its mark in 2.5 weeks, whereas right. Daredevil has until May. But the fact that they're concurrent, all the more reason, hey, while we have Clark Gregg on set, can you stand over by this green screen and be like, hey, New York is looking pretty good there, Daredevil. Okay, thanks. Now we'll comp that in and so on, you know, like whatever exactly. It is, however they're going to do all that. It's just interesting that these productions are going concurrently.
Pay attention on the Twitter and the Facebook and through your social media as to where your actors are at different times, because that's the best indication in light of social media of who's going to do what, when, and where.
Indeed, it's difficult for them to hide some of that, you know, in terms of like, not going to say, hey, I'm on the set of Daredevil because Daredevil gets in touch with S.H.I.E.L.D., but hey, Clark Gregg is in New York for 2 days. That's kind of a drag to do that kind of flight on one day and leave, you know, on day 3. Oh, wait a minute. Let's read between the tea leaves here. He's probably not there to just like get some bagels and go to Central Park.
Right.
But Pete, bringing it back to Agent Carter for a moment, there was a little casting news. First is that Enver Djokaj, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, has been cast as the wounded agent, Daniel Sousa. And also Chad Michael Murray of, I know you were such a big One Tree Hill fan, Pete. Chad Michael Murray is playing the not wounded agent, Jack Thompson.
I saw the Thompson casting, I should say, I immediately got excited because I thought non-wounded agent Jack Thompson was being played by Chaz Michael, he of the Blades of Glory, the character that Will Ferrell played, and I was sadly mistaken.
By the way, Enver Djokaj played a cop in Avengers. And let me just tell everybody right now, stop. He's clearly not playing the same person. The fact that he was also in Dollhouse and plays nice, you know, so he plays nice for the Whedons. Right. And
is he the cop? Do we know definitively? Is he the cop that Captain America, one of the two cops that Captain America says, do this, do this, do this? Wait, why should I listen to you? Biff, bow, bam. Yeah, do what he said. do we
he's
know?
He's definitely, I don't know, I'm looking it up right now. He's definitely not the heavier set guy, because he's, you know, not the one that's like, okay, so you put the things over there in the building and the
right,
stuff.
Right.
He's kind of, you know, he's a younger man.
Okay.
Let's see. He's 34.
Okay.
So kind of not that. I don't know, that heavier set cop, but that was interesting. I mean, Chad Michael Murray, who now I need to strain to say that name to not say, what was it,
Chaz Michael Michaels.
So who of course is very good at kind of smoldering. anyhow, I'm sure that the NYPD cop is not the same as the 1950s guy.
No. I know maybe that there were people. Maybe a distant relative. Maybe that'll be the, yeah. Wait, his grandson will later interact with Captain America, who he had a connection with back in the day in the formation of S.H.I.E.L.D. I mean, that could be kind of cool, but it would also be really kind of forced as a triangle of Kevin Bacon there or what have you.
Well, it's like the whole thing, you know, the actress who played Star-Lord's mom was played an American woman who goes on the date with Bucky and not yet Captain America when they go to the World's Fair. And people are like, oh, man, it's all connected. It's like, no, she's a British actress.
Yeah,
they filmed both of them in England.
Right. And
she's a familiar face who is probably really nice. And they're like, hey, let's bring you back.
They like her. And here's some makeup and you're not the same character. And
you were so charming in the other movie, we want to get some money. Like, this is a sucky part where you got to get you put in a bald cap and a ton of makeup for like one scene. Will you do it? Great. Like, come on. She's not, it's all connected, but it's not all connected, you know. Oh man, Phil Coulson had on dark shoes and I saw that Hawkeye wears dark shoes, so that means Coulson is Hawkeye's dad. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Speaking of other casting stuff, well, Agent Carter stuff in general, there still is no official confirmation that Dominic Carter is playing Howard Stark. It is stated as fact on Wikipedia. Pete, I'll pause so you can give a little rant or at least a knowing sigh.
Just there you a go. Sigh.
They do footnote it to one British paper who interviewed Haley Atwell, who really strongly does indicate that. I just wonder if it's one of these things like Chloe Bennett going, he's a Kree. And the next day it's like, she takes out the paper and she's like, I would like to say that he is not a Kree. And Jeffrey Loeb is a fantastic man. And now I would like to tell you Morse code that says, I don't mean what I am saying right now.
Blink, Chloe, if you're being held at gunpoint. But we now know that Tahiti and Coulson and Skye's recovery was fueled by half of a Kree being in light of what took place in Guardians of the Galaxy. And I love that's an unspoken thing. It will have to be spoken at some point on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so that's fine. It'll get done there. Will it be in the catch-up? Oh, and by the way, you know, hey, I have Kree blood and you have Kree blood. And what's a Kree? No, they're ultimately going to get to that. I'm going to make a prediction that at some point this season, Matt, we're going to see the actor who played Rondo Ondata. It's a tough one to pronounce. Forgive me. Okay. No, Yondu. In Guardians of the Galaxy, Michael Rooker, ex of The Walking Dead, Merle from Walking Dead, that he will guest star in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. at some point this season. That's my prediction.
That would be cool. And I think look, for everybody who was like, oh man, they didn't immediately give me what I wanted, which was a payoff as the blue guy by the end of the season. Like, come on, there are no, how many aliens have showed up? Aside from Thor, who, the Asgardians already have a connection to Earth. How many, like, aliens showed up in the Marvel Cinematic Universe so far? Well, just in Avengers, there was, like, you know, robot hybrid guys. Can we wait until we get to the movie that takes place entirely with aliens in space to then explain who that big blue guy was? Like, Pete, I think your prediction is absolutely correct. And for people who are just like, man, that's a thread that... Yeah, guess what? They filmed Guardians of the Galaxy last summer. They made Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. last little bit of summer, fall, winter, and spring. They knew there was going to be big, giant blue guys in Guardians of the Galaxy. So, like, chill. Like, you can't have the awesome payoff a year later and pay it off next week.
And I think the casting of Rooker was informed by the fact that, one, all right, you killed him off The Walking Dead. and you give him a larger platform in films as he had rightfully earned, but two, to bring him back now to TV where he's made his bones to this point in a guesting, recurring, et cetera, situation makes entirely too much sense. But back on the Dominic Carter thing, you mentioned the Jokopedia, that site where, you know, in Star Trek times, it would work great if everyone could correctly, factually enter information instead of, defacing the September 11th and Obama pages to the point where they need to be locked. But Haley Atwell has also tweeted that Dominic Carter is...
Dominic Cooper, by the way. I misspoke earlier and I messed you up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which it goes all the way back to our Pierce, the guy who directed Sideways, who is not the director of who is not one of the board people at S.H.I.E.L.D. played by Robert Redford. We're back to that again. So Dominic Cooper, sorry, my bad.
Okay. So and tweeted that he is back in the capacity as Howard Stark, last seen in Captain America: The First Avenger. So we'll see. They may be holding that back for some kind of, welcome to level 7. It was really dark around that corner. I just couldn't help myself. Type of reveal. Really, did you think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. wasn't going to happen without Agent Coulson? Do you think that an Agent Carter show can't happen without Tony Stark's dad? I don't think so. And maybe it's a money thing at this point. Who knows?
Two more little bits. There are rumors for Agent Carter. There are rumors of some sort of crossover with Ant-Man regarding flashbacks. I think the assumption right now is it's going to be maybe stuff more towards the film than the series. But I think if ABC, Marvel, Disney are all playing it smart, they're going to start to say that there's a little bit less of a line between those,
right,
which worked so well for the Captain America stuff. But even then, it was kind of like S.H.I.E.L.D. was Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was a little bit off to the side for all that.
Yeah.
I think with this, it's just kind of like if it flows both ways, you're going to be like, wow, I really need to watch Agent Carter. I need to pick it up on Blu-ray before Ant-Man comes out, that kind of thing.
With as well as things are going for Marvel Cinematic Universe and their TV offshoots, which we hold under the same umbrella to this point, Ant-Man represents the most troubled production they've had to this point. Losing the director that had brought this from any kind of infancy to where it is now, and the fact that it's still coming out or slated to come out in July of next year. I think there are a lot of moving parts. The thing we're hearing goes back to Tony Stark's dad, to Howard Stark, that the actor who played him in Iron Man 2, which is your madman guy and your veteran actor, Matt?
John Slattery.
Okay. Who will... supposedly, allegedly portray that era Howard Stark in some flashback stuff, or even just, you know, where the narrative is at that point with Ant-Man. But, you know, after Guardians of the Galaxy, Ant-Man represents the second biggest risk that the Marvel Universe has taken in this incarnation to this point.
Look, at a certain point, you would assume Marvel's going to not hit a home run. Is it just going to be will it be a glorious triple, or will it be a ground out? I mean, it's got to happen eventually. I feel like we kind of saw that with Pixar, where it was like just massive perfection after massive perfection, and then just a slight slowing. I'm certainly not saying that it's going to be Ant-Man, but I mean, there's a ton of money tied up and a ton of pressure tied up to get this movie out on time. You're not going to have the luxury of a lot of tweaks when a lot of it isn't even in the can yet.
Right.
It definitely, you know, for me as a consumer, it definitely is a little scary because I want to be consuming the good stuff. I don't want to be sitting there, Pete, as I was sitting by you during Man of Steel, just going, this is not what I want. Forget even like, oh, I just lost $10 at the movie theater. It's just like, this isn't hitting the emotional heartstrings that I was hoping for.
You really had to create, both for me and for our listeners, a post-traumatic stress moment there by even bringing that up. How could you? But if there is a year where they can afford a potential misstep or a letdown or whatever you could possibly think that might happen with Ant-Man, given the trouble in its production, it's next year, coming on the heels of the Avengers sequel. It's like the perfect opportunity to slot that in there just in case. Okay, Matt, we could be talking, you know, this time next year, and Avengers is, you know, the top grossing film of the year, and Ant-Man is second, and it's the same situation that we're looking at right now. Or we could be looking at a little bit of a different situation. I'm really high on the casting of Paul Rudd. Okay. I love that they've brought, though I don't really particularly have a huge affinity for Michael Douglas in his complete body of work. I'm a huge fan in that he's been cast in this. I think that's a really interesting decision and in where he is in his career. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, after the whole Behind the Candelabra thing. Okay, and it's a different cachet at this point in his career, and Evangeline Lilly, and a lot of the other choices, and I'm really interested to see that. Am I Avengers Age of Ultron interested? No way. But given that early tease footage that emerged from San Diego Comic-Con a couple years ago, and just how, you know, a goofy concept like Ant-Man had been portrayed in a really compelling action you know, manner, you know, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt until, you know, those credits roll and that post credit scene referencing, you know, the next Hulk movie or whatever comes through. And yeah, I mean, you give it the opportunity with everything that's gone on. The deck is certainly stacked against them, but let's see.
This might sound like a weird connection to make, but bear with me here. I read how in Disney musicals, there are no songs after the second act, presumably because then just the story takes over full time. I think kind of Marvel movie, I mean, any movie that's going to have special effects is kind of a similar way, in that all the kind of flash, bang, boom, Ant-Man stuff where, oh, he's running on the guy's collar and then he jumps down and he grows big and flips the guy over, like all that kind of super wow stuff. Yes, I hope to be wowed throughout the whole movie, but by the third act of Ant-Man, I should be caring about his relationship to Evangeline Lilly and the previous Ant-Man played by Michael Douglas and the conflict with Yellowjacket. And you know, I should be worried about that stuff more than like, oh man, it was so cool when he was running over the guy's glasses and then, you know, got big and karate chopped him in the nose. Like, you know, at a certain point, the story has to take over and it stops being a special effects movie and it becomes a movie where the special effects serve the story.
Hey, I just want the tree man to save everybody towards the end and then to culminate in a conflict with the bad guy in which there's a dance off. That's what I'm looking for.
By the way, Pete, I'll mention one more bit of rumor that I saw online, and I was just like, I'm not even going to say what website it is because clearly they don't have brains. One website said that Ron Livingston, yes, you might remember him from, I believe he played Burger in Sex and the City. Also, he was in the World War II thing, Pete. Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
There was a rumor that he's going to play in Agent Carter, World War II vet, Sergeant Nick Fury. That's your reminder to not believe everything that you read online, because let's just say I think that he pales in comparison to Samuel L. Jackson's portrayal of Nick Fury.
Yeah, I'm going to need you to not cast a African-American character with a Caucasian one, most known for playing the protagonist in Office Space.
And maybe you could come in on Saturday and go ahead and not do that.
Yeah.
A wacky rumor that obviously I'm sharing for chuckles more than any sense of credibility. So
now, you know, I know there was a Caucasian version of Nick Fury before, and that, you know, Samuel Jackson has become, you know, so connected to that role in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and maybe there's some kind of possibility of an assumed identity or anything like that. I mean, who knows? Who knows? They could reference that comic past. I don't know if that'll happen here.
I mean, if anything, and I'm sure our listeners know, in the official, is it the official comics or is it the Ultimate? See, if you're not in the know, Marvel Comics has a sub-universe called Ultimate Marvel, where that's their place to kind of tinker with the way things normally are, but not kind of upend it. Regardless, there is a, it is in Ultimate Marvel. In the Ultimate Marvel universe of comics, Nick Fury has been replaced with his African-American son, Nick Fury Jr., who looks like Samuel L. Jackson, because the Samuel L. Jackson casting is so popular and has driven that.
Yeah.
So point being, like, there are Marvel comics where Nick Fury is African-American. There's no way. And I hear what you're saying with maybe some sort of chuckle type thing of...
I don't even think a chuckle, like, an assumed identity or, you know, that kind of thing. Who's to say that Sam L. Jackson's character's name is really Nick Fury? Maybe he's... You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Maybe like it's a Dick Whitman, Don Draper thing?
Yeah, possibly.
I'm glad you agree, having not really seen much of Mad Men.
How do you know? But anyway.
So, Pete, I guess with that, that covers all the bits and pieces from the summer out of Marvel Cinematic Universe. We hit on Daredevil, certainly. I mean, there hasn't been a ton of information in there that's, you know, clearly under wraps. But I think we've hit it all there.
I think we have as well.
Well, that, Pete, how can people be in touch with you?
You can find me and interact with me on the Twitter. You can search at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 4,103 followers. Can't be wrong.
Yowza. I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost. You can share your thoughts about the podcast and Marvel stuff, etc., by being in touch with Fantastic Geek. That's fantastic with a PH. You can find us at the.com, Twitter, and Gmail. And with that, Pete, I'm sure we'll probably chat one more time just with general season 2 expectations for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Probably do that maybe the Tuesday before it returns. And other than that, I will give you your final word.
We are Groot.